Paul Roberts is the author of the new book, The End of Food. He's also the author of the best-selling The End of Oil. In the second part of our interview with Paul Roberts, we asked him about the organic food movement in the United States, which has flourished in the past decade. In his book, The End of Oil, Roberts writes that the ascendancy of organic food is stifled, co-opted by the same system that has produced large-scale industrial food production.
Well, you know, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview the trend towards substitution, you know, using cheap ingredients for more expensive ones. And really you're seeing that in terms of this kind of alternative food movement. You know, what begins at the margins where people say, look, we want fewer pesticides or we want food that's grown in fairer ways. You know, the food industry says, well, how can we do that without really changing our system? So they basically run the same supply chains, the same factories, the same systems that they have. They just run it with different ingredients. So they use, instead of conventionally produced flour, they use organic flour and then in their bread, and then they say, okay, it's organic. Well, technically it is organic, but the point of organic 100 years ago was that it was sort of a holistic approach. It wasn't just not using chemicals. It was also sort of creating an integrated, balanced food system that, you know, had animals and crops and replenished its own fertility and sort of took care of the land in a sustainable way. I mean, that was the idea. What the sort of modern organic movement has basically taken one or two ingredients, that's sort of a checklist. You know, thou shalt not use, you know, synthetically produced fertilizers, thou shalt not use synthetic pesticides, and a few other things, and once you've, you know, met those requirements, then lo and behold, you're organic. But you haven't done anything about the larger question of sort of rebalancing the food system. So that's, as long as we keep the, you know, the existing industrial food system intact, it's going to be very tough to really accomplish the goals that were laid out, again, a century ago when the organic movement began. Now, the other side of that is, how do you, if we were to sort of rebalance the system and create a system that was, that reintegrated livestock and crop production so that you were fertilizing your own land and sort of having this self-contained, self-replenishing system, would that be able to generate enough food that we're going to need for all the people we have? You know, it's one of the challenges of organic is how do you come up with enough fertilizer to feed 6.5 billion people? And if in most of the alternatives they're talk about, whether it's local farms, small farms, organic, those will all really struggle to meet the demands of a world that has not only more people, but more people eating higher up the food chain.
You write also in your book that nearly every credible forecast shows that if we're to have any chance of meeting future food demand in a sustainable fashion, that we have to lower our meat consumption, that it's absolutely essential to do so. But that's like getting people in our government away from an oil-based economy, some would say, and an energy policy to an alternative one. Although we're seeing a lot of that discussion right now. You talked about that, of course, in your previous book, The End of Oil. The End of Food, I mean, meat is such a big part of this, and this demand for meat is so much greater now. How do you see this playing out in the next few decades?
Well, meat is really essential here. You know, meat is resource intensive. It takes 8 pounds of grain to make a pound of meat on average. So as, you know, countries like China and India become more carnivorous, their demand for meat goes up, the demand for grain goes up geometrically. So we know that that's critical. We know that, you know, if we were to reduce meat intake, we would sort of take a lot of pressure off the global food system and make it, you know, it would take a lot of pressure off a lot of sort of environmental costs that we're now paying. You know, a huge amount of the grain that we grow goes to feeding livestock, and that so there's a lot of costs associated with that. Now, how do you get people to eat less meat without, like, killing them? And, you know, meat is the first food that people buy when they can afford it. We're designed for meat. We crave it. And so that's going to be a powerful force to try to sort of impede. I think what you know, is changing people's eating habits and will change them is price. I mean, you know, as meat becomes more expensive, we'll eat less of it. We'll eat the kind of less expensive kinds of meat, like chicken. And that is probably one way that we're going to see a slight decline in meat intake. That's how price works. The problem there is that we'll see, I think, also a return to this very wide gulf between the haves and the have-nots. You know, as meat becomes more expensive, only those that have the money will be able to afford it. We're going to go back to a time when, you know, a large share of the population couldn't get the meat and the important proteins that come with meat. And I think that's going to be more and more of the challenge of the food system going forward. It's, you know, dealing with a world in which a lot of us can afford to eat well, but perhaps even more can't.